Live Creative Now, episode 39.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast designed to help you live a full-color life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, the truth is that no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. For almost 2 weeks now, I have had a new creative practice. I sit in bed and I doodle every morning for anywhere from 15 minutes to 30 minutes or sometimes even more. Just playing with black line on white paper, no color, no mess, just a simple little black marker. And I start with no preconceived idea. I never know how I'm going to start, and I never know what's going to emerge. And even though all I'm using is this little marker, sometimes it's a Pitt artist pen, and sometimes it's a Pigma Micron, this is creative sandbox play at its best. The creative sandbox is that space, that mental space, where it is all about the joy in the doing it. It's all about the process, not the product. I have an entire episode about the creative sandbox. I believe it's episode number 5, I think. Anyway, the important thing, one of the most important things I would say, is that as much as is sort of humanly possible, when I'm doing these morning doodles, anytime I'm in the creative sandbox, I'm totally detached from the outcome, focused on just having fun. And the cool part is that these little morning doodles that I've been doing, I often really like the outcome. And it's been really fascinating to me. I've been thinking a lot lately about how very different this experience is, these morning doodles, this play, how very different it is from how I used to approach my art not that long ago. And I was thinking lately that if my life were a movie, I would have to rewind all the way back to nursery school to find a scene that matches the kind of playfulness and joy that I get from making art these days. Not just these doodles, but something about making these doodles has made me really think about that. So I thought it would be interesting to take you on a few flashbacks of my life as an artist that have a lot to reveal about my evolution, or I'm tempted to say de-evolution, as an artist. So, flashback number one, nursery school. I'm standing outside at an easel, and my mommy has arrived to pick me up, and I remember so clearly showing her a painting that I had just finished. In fact, I might have still been painting it when she arrived. I remember those big clunky brushes, and I remember those chalky poster paints that were made out of powder mixed with water. The colors were never very, very bright. And I remember so clearly standing there beaming at my painting. I remember the painting vaguely. I probably might even live in a box somewhere in my house. It was drips and smushes. I think it had a lot of sort of that purple, that poster paint purple that was really more like a brown and teal. And I remember looking at it and saying to my mom, it's a house. And knowing that I had painted a house, even though it looked nothing like the little kid drawing of a house that you would imagine, it was an abstract painting, but it was a house. And I have no memory of what my mom said. That apparently was irrelevant to my three-year-old mind, because that's not what stuck in my memory. All I remember is how much fun it was to paint. It was so free. And I remember being really proud and really happy that I made this thing. Flashback two, kindergarten now. I remember sitting at the art table. I don't know if it was the art table. It was sitting at a table with markers. And my friends Mandy and Laura are drawing bunnies and chickies. And I remember wanting to draw bunnies and chickies too. I really liked the bunnies and chickies that they were drawing. So I copied them. And we all drew bunnies and chickies. And I remember us just giggling and giggling, drawing our bunnies and chickies in scenes on hillsides and lawns and wherever they were with our fat markers in kindergarten. Flashback number three. In kindergarten again, it's sometime before Easter. I know this because our teacher, Mrs. Chong, gives each of us a big egg-shaped piece of white cardstock to take home and decorate. It's like a poster, heavy paper, white, cut out in the shape of an egg. And she explains that all of the kids in all of the schools all over the entire city of Palo Alto get one of these egg posters to take home and decorate however they want. And this is all part of the Great Easter Egg Contest. And some children will win prizes. There will be a first prize with a blue ribbon and $5, and a second prize with a red ribbon, and a third prize with a yellow ribbon, and a bunch of honorable mention prizes. And I am so excited because I know I am going to win that first prize. I am going to win that blue ribbon and those $5. So I skip home with that egg in my hand, and I'm really careful not to bend it. And it's big, so that's a little challenging. But I do it. I carefully carry it all the way home. And as soon as I'm through the door, I run over to my crayons and I pull them out and I plunk down right at the kitchen counter and I start drawing my masterpiece. It's got bunnies marching all around the edge of the egg. And then there's chickies marching all around in a smaller line around the egg. And there's eggs marching around the egg and flowers all marching in nesting ovals around the egg, all pastel colors. It's gorgeous. I spent no time hemming and hawing, you know, about what do I draw? What should I draw? There was no resistance. There was no judgment. It was just pure joy. I just sat down and did it. And I remember looking at my egg and feeling so proud. And I could just feel that silky blue ribbon in my hand because I knew I was going to win. Flashback number four. We're in kindergarten again, but now it's several weeks later. And I'm sitting on the rug in a clump with all the other kindergartners, and I'm just waiting for Mrs. Chong to announce my first place prize. She starts reading out the honorable mentions first, and she calls my name. My heart just drops to the floor and shatters. There's got to be a mistake. But I get up. All the kids who win are supposed to get up and walk to the front of the room, get their eggs back and get their prize. And everything slows down and my ears are buzzing. I'm kind of in a haze and I get up and I walk to the front of the room and I get my egg back. And I stand with the other honorable mention recipients as their names are called. And I am totally numb as Mrs. Chong announces the third place winner and the second place winner. And then my numbness turns to shock and absolute rage when Mrs. Chong holds up the first place egg. It is a blot of random colors. It's like a baby's scribble. It's so bad. This person, this winner, Stephanie, did not carefully draw bunnies and chickies and flowers and eggs all around her egg. She just scribbled, and she won first prize. This is so not fair. And Mrs. Chong hands Stephanie that blue ribbon, and she hands her the envelope that's jangles with $5 worth of coins. I've always wondered why they had coins in there instead of dollar bills. And I am just inflamed with envy and so confused why I didn't win. Somehow I managed to hold in my tears until I get home, where I crawl into my mommy's lap and I sob and sob and sob. Flashback number 5. First grade now. Aaron Brody is drawing race cars. Really, really good race cars. They look real. Now, I have no desire to draw race cars, but it is still very clear to me that Aaron Brody is much better at drawing than I am. Flashback number 6. 5th grade. The poster that I ordered from the Scholastic Book Club has arrived. It's a painting of a rabbit, and it's so realistic that I can make out every single hair of its fur. I love this poster, but I cannot paint like this. If I were a real artist, I am quite sure I would be able to paint like this. Clearly, I am not a real artist. Flashback number 7. Middle school, age 13. I'm in a drawing class after school at the local art center with older kids and adults. And we've just come inside from drawing the trees out in the courtyard. We were each instructed to choose a tree and to draw that tree. Everybody else's trees look like trees. They look exactly like the trees in the courtyard. Mine looks like a disaster. It does not look like a tree. It looks like a baby's drawing of a tree. This is just more confirmation that I am not a real artist. And I do not sign up for art classes again. Flashback number 8, high school. My friend Karen draws all the time, and she wants to go to the Rhode Island School of Design and major in fashion, and her drawings are amazing. Clearly, she is a real artist, unlike me. Yet more confirmation that I am not a real artist. I did not make art for 15 years between the ages of 13 and 28. And really, it's kind of amazing that I ever came back to art. But I did. When I was 28, I tiptoed back into making things with my hands. Now, I didn't call it art at the time. I just was making things. And that was the year that I dove into calligraphy. Interestingly enough, calligraphy is a refuge for countless creators who think to themselves, well, I'm not an artist. I can't draw, but I can write. So surely I can learn calligraphy. It can't be too hard, right? Well, that was me. And famous last words, it's a really, really good thing that I didn't realize how hard calligraphy is when I started. Otherwise, I might never have started. But something about it really captivated me. And I persevered through the hard. I labored to learn how to draw beautiful letters. And I labored over meticulously designed pieces. And I got, quote unquote, good enough to hang out that, you know, proverbial shingle and actually charge money for my work. And within a couple of years, I was even calling myself an artist. But not that long after that, all of those same doubts, all of those same gremlins came out of the woodwork, and they came out of the woodwork with a vengeance. Which brings me to another flashback. I guess this would be flashback number 9. Now it's the late 90s. I'm married to my first husband, and I have a tiny, growing calligraphy business. And more than one couple has actually paid me to make the ketubah for their wedding. This is a big deal. A ketubah, a Jewish marriage contract, is something that couples really, really, you know, they want to pick the perfect ketubah, the perfect ketubah artist. And I've made a number of these at this point. I remember standing in my studio, the second bedroom, tearing open an envelope and unfolding a flyer to read a call for entry. Call for entries for a show, an art show. And I really want to make something to enter. But I don't even try because I know nothing I make could possibly be good enough. That, brilliant, is perfectionist paralysis. Now notice, it wasn't about whether it was fun, but whether it was good, whether I was good. Where did that unconstrained delight of that little 3-year-old me, where did it go? This is where the creative sandbox comes in. Some part of me never forgot that 3-year-old me. And thankfully, just five years ago now, I let that 3-year-old's wisdom teach me. That 3-year-old was very, very wise. I knew that if I was ever going to get back to creative joy again, something had to change. Perfectionist paralysis had me in a like death grip. So I very intentionally set out to reoccupy the mindset of a 3-year-old. And in the process, over a couple of years, I developed the 10 rules, quote unquote, of my Creative Sandbox Manifesto, which again, you can hear about, and I think it's episode 5. I hope I'm right. And now here I am, I'm approaching 50. I'm going to turn 50 this year. And I am finally recapturing the freedom and the delight that each one of us entered the world with. We all enter the world with that entitlement to play and create. As a child, it all came naturally. You might have to go back to 3 years old in order to find that place. But at some point, every single one of us created totally naturally because it was fun, because it delighted us. As an adult, riddled with creativity scars, I now need rules and reminders to keep me playing freely. And I do not consider this a problem because my philosophy is whatever works, baby. And for me, one of those things is improvisation. One of the reasons that I like to start a new piece, whether it's a doodle or a big painting, anything, a piece of music, one of the reasons I like to start without any pre-planned ideas is that it really helps to prevent perfectionism from creeping in and grinding me to a halt. Because if I have no plan, there's no way I can screw it up. So for me, this spontaneous improvisational way of working allows me to be in this constant state of discovery and curiosity, which is exactly where I want to be. I discover what the artwork wants to be as I go along, kind of like I'm in partnership with the art. We are discovering together, and there's no pressure. It's pure play. And I still marvel at my ability to let go and do this, because for so many years, I was trapped in perfectionist paralysis, completely unable to let go and play, unable to explore, and unable to just do it. And it was only when I finally allowed myself the freedom to make crap that I returned to the freedom that I remember feeling back in nursery school, when art was play. And the only rules were, you know, wear a smock and don't put the paint in your mouth or your hair or anybody else's mouth or hair. Those were the only rules. As I like to say, allowing yourself to create badly doesn't mean you'll create bad stuff. It just means you'll create. And that is what we want. It is such a huge relief to have finally discovered or rediscovered the creative sandbox where this kind of play can happen again. And that's what I want for you. I want you to also rediscover that space for you where you can freely, joyously engage in that kind of play. You can do just that by joining me for a week of really joyful creating in Creative Sandbox 101, which starts on Monday, January 25th. Find your inner three-year-old again, and you will learn how to break the shackles of self-doubt and resistance once and for all. Just go to creativesandbox101.com to get all the information about it. I would love to have you. So that's it. That's a wrap. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and go over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and review, because boy, those reviews, they make such a big difference in helping other people find the show. Here are a couple of reviews that people have left. Chublee, Chubblee, wrote, "Awesome podcast. I just found this podcast and can't listen enough. I've already listened to a few episodes twice. I love Melissa's voice and energy." Thank you, Chublee. That makes me really, really happy that you listened more than once. That's awesome. And Sally J. Fox writes, "Booster shot. Melissa's tuned into one of my passionate interests, and listening to her is like getting a booster shot to my creative urges." Excellent. I love it, Sally. Thank you so much for leaving a review. You can leave your own review over on iTunes, and you don't know, I might just read it on a future episode. Meanwhile, I wanted to remind you again that I am starting the next round of Creative Sandbox 101 on Monday, January 25th, and the shopping cart closes on Sunday, January 24th at 9 o'clock Pacific time. So if you are interested in joining me for this week-long course that has changed over 1,000 people's lives at this point, head on over to creativesandbox101.com. That's creativesandbox101.com. Thanks again for joining me, and until next time, go get creating! Mwah!
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.